Now, we will cross the water. Theresa's May departure from Downing Street has raised the likelihood, if not, you know, nothing is a certainty in politics, but the extreme likelihood that her successor will be a hardline Brexiteer. Also raised real fears of a no-deal Brexit, which, as we know, has very serious economic concerns for us here. Now, we're joined on the line by the London editor with the Irish Times, Dennis Staunton. I mean, it was on the way. What does she do now, Dennis?
Well, she stays where she is for the moment because she has said that she'll resign as leader of the Conservative Party on the 7th of June, and then she'll stay as Prime Minister until a new leader is elected. They're hoping to have that all done by the end of July.
Sounds a long way off, doesn't it?
It does. Now, if you go back to when she got elected in 2016, David Cameron said the same thing. I'll stay on until my successor is elected. And he thought he'd be there for about 3 months. And in fact, as it turned out, when Andrea Leadsom, who was the only other person left standing, as well as Theresa May, she pulled out because she gave a foolish interview where she suggested that because Theresa May didn't have children, she wouldn't really be able to be a good prime minister. God. And so she pulled out. And so the whole process was shortened. Now,
and
I think we're all expecting this time there will be a real one.
I do beg your pardon. I just want to ask you, can you remember what Gove did to Boris Johnson?
I can. He was the Boris Johnson's campaign manager. And as the campaign started to unfold, and this was at the stage, you know, the Tory party leadership is in two stages. The first is that the MPs choose two candidates, and those two candidates then go before the entire membership of the party. And the MPs go through this series of ballots. And so as they were getting towards the beginning of this stage, Michael Gove got frustrated by what he saw as Boris Johnson's lack of seriousness about the thing, that he just decided that he was going to be a terrible candidate. And so the day before, the night before Boris Johnson was about to launch his bid, Michael Gove had a meeting with some of his friends and said, you know what, I'm going to pull my support from him and I'm going to run myself. And he announced this a few minutes before Boris was due to announce the start of his formal campaign. So Boris went out and started to make this rather long speech. And eventually he said, you know, we need a new leader, but that person is not going to be me because I don't think I'd be able to get the support. So he withdrew. And
it was also regarded as a kind of a masterful stab in the back. But I heard the same Mr. Gove the other day talking about what a wonderful Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson had been. And elegant was one of the words that he used in it. And I was thinking of the woman in prison in Iran, and I wonder if she would take the view that he was a wonderful foreign minister.
No, and in fact, most people don't share the view that he was a very good foreign minister. I think he was regarded as a successful and certainly a popular mayor of London. As foreign secretary, it's an interesting one because actually that particular incident where he kind of blurted out at a meeting, at a committee meeting in Parliament, that he suggested that this woman, Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe, had been working when she was on holiday, and that helped to keep her in prison. So he made a few gaffes, but actually, oddly enough, he was pretty conventional in that he did what he was told by the diplomats. And so there is some suggestion that if he were to become prime minister, that although he would be accident prone and might say some foolish things, that in terms of policy, his history is to have been pretty conventional.
And I mean, what's the possibility that Gove would do the same thing to him again?
Well, I think the expectation is that Gove is going to run as a candidate himself. So Michael Gove is not backing Boris Johnson. He's saying, you know, polite things about everybody, but he's not, you know, Michael Gove has his own campaign and has had for quite some time. And so he's hoping to run as somebody who was a real Brexiteer. He was chairman of the Vote Leave campaign, but he backed Theresa May's deal and he stayed with the government all the way through. So he'd be kind of the moderate, sane Brexiteer against the no-deal Brexiteer wing kind of thing.
Right. To be parochial and selfish about things, as you look through the runners and riders, and as we really don't want a crash-out Brexit, Who's going to emerge there as the more reasonable versus the unreasonable?
Well, there are two lanes in a way. So there's the kind of the hard Brexiteer lane, and that would be Boris Johnson, who's kind of the front runner, and then Dominic Raab, who's former Brexit secretary, who's a bit younger and is regarded as a bit more hard line. And the government in Dublin doesn't like him because they had dealings with him during the negotiations about the backstop. They don't like him in Brussels either. They think he's a bit shifty. And so he would not be a welcome prime minister in Dublin or in Brussels.
Right.
And so he's really competing with Boris for that kind of lane.
Space,
and then
on
the other side, you've got a number of cabinet ministers. The foreign secretary, Jeremy Hunt, who backed Remain but has now become quite sort of hardline-ish on Brexit. Sajid Javid, who's the Home Secretary, Rory Stewart, who's the International Development Secretary, who's a very eloquent advocate of moderation and said he wouldn't serve under Boris Johnson if he went for a no-deal Brexit. And then you've got Michael Gove, who would be somewhere in the middle as a Brexiteer who would nonetheless have quite a lot of support among the moderates. I think from the point of view of Brussels and Dublin, they would, on the one hand, they prefer to deal with somebody who wants a deal, but there is this idea, particularly in Brussels, that Boris Johnson might be somebody who has the kind of personality and the sort of flexibility with regard to policy and ideology, where he would be able to campaign as a hard Brexiteer, but go over to Brussels, do a deal, which is more or less the same as Theresa May's, and then come back and claim victory and be able to sell it to his own base.
Right.
And so there is some optimism that, that he's malleable. And what seems to have been happening over the last couple of weeks is he's been meeting various Conservative backbenchers, and he's been telling a lot of the Remainers, I'm talking about a no-deal Brexit, but I don't want a no-deal Brexit, so don't worry. This is really tactical in terms of negotiations. But of course, the word is getting back to the Brexiteers, and they're now getting a bit suspicious.
It really is quite extraordinary, because somebody else said on the programme last week that he's the kind of person that says, oh my goodness, I didn't fully realise that there was a deal, etc, etc. But I was watching Dominic Grieve on Newsnight the other night, and he was asked a question about, as it were, endgame. And we were under the understanding that whoever gets it, they could work down the clock until next October, and wham bam, there we are, hard Brexit. But he seemed to be raising an issue that if the question of no deal was on the cards, that he and others would have a vote of no confidence in the new Prime Minister.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen anyway, because what Labour is saying is that this person who is being chosen as Prime Minister of the country, being chosen by Tory MPs and about 120,000 Conservative members who are not really representative of the electorate more generally in Britain. So they're saying the new Prime Minister, whoever it is, should face a vote of confidence in the Commons. Now, if this new Prime Minister has campaigned on a policy of leaving without a deal, it is possible that at that stage, people like Dominic Grieve and other anti-Brexit Conservatives could cross the floor. And that would then mean, under the Fixed-Term Parliament Act, if, say, Boris were to lose the vote of confidence, then there's 14 days when Jeremy Corbyn has a chance to try to put together a government. And if that doesn't work, they have another vote of confidence. And if Boris loses that one, then he has to have a general election. And the problem with that is that as long as Brexit is not resolved, you've got Nigel Farage's Brexit Party, which looks like it's going to
master
win the European
election.
Master
of the universe, yeah.
Exactly. And the trouble with them is, even if they don't do nearly as well in the Westminster elections, it's first past the post. And if there's a marginal seat and they take votes from the Conservatives, you let a Labour candidate in. And so Conservatives are looking at the prospect of losing their seats. And worse than that, putting Jeremy Corbyn into Downing Street. And for many Conservatives, the idea of Jeremy Corbyn in Downing Street is really horrifying. It's not for them like putting any other Labour government in. They regard him as far too radical for their liking, and they think that he would transform society in such a way that it would take more than another election victory to change it all.
Right. On one occasion, we were talking to Chris Patton about it. I think he's Lord Patton now. And he was livid because he doesn't support Brexit. But he raised an issue about Murdoch and the newspapers. I know we all talk about social media today and so on and so forth. But the term he used in the run-up to that of what he called lies and misinformation was it was a weaponized press. Is that still the case?
Well, it's funny, actually. The press has changed quite a bit over the last couple of years. So, for example, the Bible of Middle England conservatism has been the Daily Mail.
Yeah.
And the Daily Mail was for many years edited by Paul Dacre, who was very hardline Brexiteer, and he ran all those headlines saying "crush the saboteurs" about and he named the judges
who were blocking
traitors, various Brexit things as enemies of the people. So anyway, so he retired a few months ago and has handed over to a man called Geordie Grieg, who is an old friend of David Cameron's. He's a much more moderate figure, and the Daily Mail has been the most the strongest supporter of Theresa May's push for compromise. And so from condemning the people like Dominic Grieve, the Remainers, it suddenly started to condemn the Jacob Rees-Mogg's and all these people who were holding out against her deal. So you've seen that paper changing. The Daily Express, which was also a very hard Brexiteer paper, is now owned by the same people who own The Mirror. They have a different editor,
right,
and that again has become much more moderate. So the only tabloid that's really pushing for a pretty hard Brexit is The Sun. So I'm just not sure that you could say any more,
right,
if it was ever true that the newspapers really sway everything. Because there's also, you don't forget that in the old days when The Sun was selling 6 million copies or whatever it was, most Sun readers still voted Labour, even though they were always backing the Conservatives.
I remember the "Up Yours, Dolores" was one of their famous ones. Anyway, listen, it's all very interesting, worrying and interesting as well. Dennis Daunton, London editor with the Irish Times, thank you very, very much indeed, and we'll take a break.